relationships, but you're wrong. Listen, there's no magic bullet. I'm teaching life skills.
When you're sick, you need medicine. It don't always taste good.
Nah.
But it'll get you better. You need this medicine. Yeah. It ain't gonna always taste good, but this is what you need. Men and women, bottom line, we need to have the conversation. Your partner wants to give up control, but only if you know how to drive. This is about being the best you could ever be. Whoever you are, I don't care if you're a man, a woman, LGBTQ, space aliens. I'll save anybody. I don't care. I'll teach a hedgehog how to have a threesome.
What do you mean by that?
Look, you don't have to listen to me, but you're wrong.
Listen, I know I'm great. And I know you're thinking, Dante, there's no way I could be like you. But you could be me. You know why?
Because you know who I was? Before I was me, I was you. You.
Man score 202.
Better hear what I've got to say because you won't get it again.
I'm not an alpha male. I'm not a beta male either. I'm just a better man. Better man. Well, put your happiness first, because if you don't, they won't.
Yo. What up? GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, what would Dante do? The sexual revolution is being podcasted, and I am excited. We got a special guest. Now, I know I've said that 1,000 times before, but this time I really mean it. Harry, what's up? You ready to rock and roll?
Hey, you know damn well I'm ready to rock and roll. I'm ready to kick it with all the fly ladies and fellas. Is that what kids are saying nowadays?
I don't
rock
know.
Out, keep I'm on probably, trucking?
I'm almost sure they're not saying keep on trucking, but anyway. Okay. Shout out to Andre.
Bring it back.
Andre's out in L.A. doing his thing, doing big things, hoping to trying to get us a career. So we're setting him out as a scout to get a career with us. So shout out to Andre in the building. We got a special guest in the building. This young lady, love her to death. She's really hustling around. We're going to talk about that. Talk about love in a tiny house and all kinds of stuff. Give it up for Dee Burdette, y'all. Give it up for Dee Burdette. What's up, sweetie?
Thanks for having me, Dante. Excited to be here.
Thanks for doing it. I really appreciate it. It's dope. So, wait, we got to get into this first.
I've only heard about this tiny house thing on, you know, like on the internet. And sometimes people will go out of their way to buy a tiny house. Is this the case to save money or what's going on? Do you explain this tiny house situation?
I mean, it goes back like around 15 years ago. I was living in a studio apartment with my daughter in LA. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I was like, ugh. And the neighbors were loud and it was just irritating. And I stumbled upon the concept of a tiny house. Mm-hmm. People were doing container houses and just tiny living. And it was a freak occurrence that I stumbled upon it while looking for like configurations for a studio apartment. And it was just one of those things at the time that we needed to move into one like that.
Right.
And I was working at the Hollywood.
How old was your daughter at that time?
She was 16.
Okay.
So it was just almost 16.
So a lady. She was almost a lady, right?
Yeah, she was 15, and we were both at the time working at the Hollywood Improv. I was managing, and she was the box office girl.
Okay, dope.
And then we wound up in this situation where we needed to move into the studio apartment, and it was what it was. But we were looking for configurations, and I was like, oh, look at this. There's these tiny houses.
Right.
And I thought, how cute.
Right.
And I was like, look, they have no neighbors. These people live in the woods, in a field.
Right.
This is amazing.
Right.
Park anywhere. They just drive their house around when they have to move. And I thought, what a fabulous concept.
Now, were you looking at kind of the tiny houses that you hook up to a pickup truck and roll it? Or were you talking about
initially?
I also see an encapsulated where they actually, like, it's almost like an RV, but it's a, you know, convertible. Like, I've seen one on a school bus and stuff like that.
So what I have now is a school bus. We took a 37 foot flat nose school bus and converted it into a tiny home. But looking at it back then, okay. I just liked the thought of being in an air, you know, just being mobile. Uh-huh. I spent years on the road. I traveled all the time. There was always some relative consideration to, shit, I may have to move in 6 months because work's going to take me here or there. Or I'm paying, you know, $1,500 a month to live in a studio apartment in LA. And I'm there for, you know, it's housing my crap. Right. I'm not even using on the road. So it was just like, it was just kind of a thing that I've always toyed around with. And then after my husband and I got married last October, we had really through the whole pandemic and shutdown talked about how great that would be for the mobility's sake.
Right.
Like being able to just go take a job somewhere for 4 months because that's what it was, or, you know, whatever, just being mobile.
Now, is it difficult to find the parking or like to find a place to park, or can you pretty much park anywhere you want to park?
I mean, it's difficult in LA. Like, you know, I don't think you'd really want to do that in a city unless you really have it mapped out. But we're self-contained. We have solar. We do compostable in the restroom. Wow. And then we have a 100-gallon freshwater tank with filtration.
Now, where do you just hook up to a hydrant and get the water, or how does that work?
I mean, you can go to filling stations and fill, but we could also be pumped, you know, parked by a lake and throw a hose in and pump in.
Oh, and it filters, because you got a filter. Wow. Yep. That's wow.
So depending on where it is,
really cheap now.
And this is completely mobile, you're saying? Completely mobile.
Completely mobile and completely self-sustaining. So we could go park in. We're currently in the middle of the desert. And we are fortunate enough because we wanted to make a few changes to the bus. I had originally put in like a convection oven and did an induction burner. We had a lot of electric stuff running.
Right, right.
I was really, I was at first really funky about propane. I just thought, I was like, I don't want a propane stove. That I feel like
you're worried it's going to blow up.
Worry, right?
Right.
But the more that we've been on the bus and I've used propane for other things, I'm less afraid.
Okay.
And now I'm like, no, I want that propane range. I want to be able to cook gas because I cook bake.
Right.
And so I'm like, nope. I want to be able to. I want a full kitchen. So
is your daughter still with you, or?
Oh no, my daughter is almost 30. She works at Netflix.
Okay, dope. So how long was the transition between when she was 15 and you actually doing the bus, and did you? What
15
was
years.
When I did mean, you actually finish the bus?
Oh, we just started that in February, and moved into it in April. And then decided to make modifications to allow us to go fully off grid, like the solar, which my husband is actually picking up and installing today, which is why I'm dialing in from a beautiful hotel, using that term loosely, in Barstow.
Okay. All right. So the, and what about internet and stuff like that? Do you have a disc on top or what?
So currently T-Mobile offers a really good mobile solution. And that's worked so far, but we haven't been to places that don't have
internet,
reasonable access or really good service through T-Mobile.
Okay. Okay. Now the, since you started doing the solar now, right? Because it's weird. Cause I remember initially, you know, the solar panels were really kind of bulky and they weren't really efficient. And now they have, things are so much better now, you know?
So now we'll wind up with, and with what we will have on the rooftop of the bus, because it's a 37-foot school bus.
Right.
So what we'll have, and that gives us about 210 square feet of living space inside.
Wow.
We've got underneath storage, and we've built a platform on the back for, you know, where we house like the jet, where we can load, you know, we'll carry the barbecue grill, we'll carry our outside stuff. So it's basically like our garage is on the back on a platform.
That's so
and
dope.
I kept my car.
Oh, so you do?
I kept
Okay.
You can't commute in places and drive without it.
Yeah, yeah. That's so dope. Because, I mean, how long have you been in comedy for a long time? How long have you been involved in comedy?
Well, I opened the San Jose Improv in 2000.
Okay, so like 20.
And I worked with the improv comedy clubs for 13 years. Mm-hmm. I worked briefly for a ticketing company that was established in 2009. And then I left in almost 2013 when they were acquired by a different company.
And didn't you work the Ice House for a while or no?
I was the last booker at the Ice House before the shutdown.
Oh, wow.
So I was booking there. I booked John Lovett's Comedy Club for the last year that it was open.
Uh-huh.
I've produced shows off and on. I was Ralphie May's tour manager.
Right,
back so you, in 2006.
You up to your neck in this.
And being in the comedy business that long is what drives you to living in a tiny house.
You know, honestly, a big motivator was being able to
be on the road,
produce shows independently and literally be on the road.
That's awesome.
Wow.
That really is awesome to be able to just take off and go anywhere. Yeah.
Well, you know, my entire comedy career, my doors have always been open to comics. I used to do Sunday suppers every Sunday, whether I was living in a crappy little studio apartment or a big house.
Right, right. Just
I would do
comics
Sunday supper
come
and just tell them, come eat.
Yeah, that's
every amazing. That's really awesome.
I ain't going to lie, D. I mean, we haven't, you know, hung out and stuff like that, but comics have such a great, when your name comes up, there's such a great, you know, loving kind of admiration for you and just in general, just, you know, especially in a business where there's so many shitty people, you know?
A lot. Yeah. Lots of shitty.
That adoration is mutual, though, because I feel like it's the most underrated, underappreciated, difficult art form on the planet.
Yeah.
I'm a purist when it comes to stand-up, you know.
Yeah.
When they say I do a little sketch or I want to be an actor, well, go do those things, but don't discredit that stand-up is its own thing.
I love you. You're a woman after my heart because it's just it's so disrespectful. Who's your name? Your three all-time favorites.
Well, I was exposed to stand-up very, very small, so I'd have to say, from being very tiny, Red Fox and Steve Martin.
Really? Wow.
Two very different acts. But,
yeah.
Getting a little older, I listened to everything George Carlin did, Lenny Bruce.
Uh-huh. You are a purist, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I would just absorb stand-up in any way that I could. I had a fake ID at 15, not to go out and drink, but just to get into the comedy club.
Now, what made you so, I mean, what brought you, like, what was the thing that that you loved about it? I mean, you know.
I think there was always just such a, everybody in my family has always had a crazy good sense of humor about everything.
Right.
And we were raised that if you know, you weren't being picked on and if everybody wasn't talking,
they don't like you.
Yeah, we probably don't like you, know, so, yeah, and my dad was wonderfully, wonderfully funny all the time, and he was a musician, and just always exposed us to stand-up from very young. He was like, this is funny. He goes, can you imagine somebody just, like, being funny with their words all the time, and that's their job?
Wow.
Just such a, so that comes
it's funny, because I used to, you say that, because I said, I used to say, like, you know, Patrice, you know, he could cut like a and I would, and I used to always say people, I was like, if he's not making fun of you, he don't like you. Cause if he don't like you, he don't talk to you. Hey, what's up? And he just keeps it moving. But if only way he liked you is if he messed with you, you know?
I didn't get that at first because I was so used to comics and I was young. I was in my 20s when I started in 2000.
Right, right.
You know, so when I was on the road with Ralphie May 2006, of course, one of the people that I was exposed to the most, he was doing a lot of the bigger festival types, like the Opie and Anthony Festival.
Yeah.
Like
he was
all of the bigger stuff that he was doing, Ralphie was on also.
Yeah.
So so, you know, that was like that. I feel like I was on the road with them for 6 months with that.
Yeah.
Because everywhere, every big show that Ralphie had like that, Patrice was on also.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, I was a tour manager. So I was by the, I was in the green room listening, a fly on the wall.
Oh God.
In some of the most magical circumstances to be around comedy, in my opinion. I feel very blessed that I was able to be a part of that.
People don't even understand that. Like, you know, and look, I mean, you know, you're talking about, you know, the I started in 2000. So, you know, it was a whole, like, it was like, that whole Tough Crowd crew, and even, you know, Ralph used to come in, and but those guys, I think that was such a golden age of comedy because of the fact that even though they didn't realize that they were pushing each other, they were pushing each other artistically because they were so vastly different, but so very distinct, but so very good in the same sense. Greg Giraldo and Patrice and Norton, and you watch these guys, and I really got to watch these guys at a very young age and kind of and grow up under that, what you talk about, those kind of magical moments.
Oh, 100%. I think one of the more underrated comics that came out of that time is Jim Florentine. He's bar none one of my favorites.
Really?
And I love, like, I love what he does. And I feel like he was in that generation of comics.
Well, you know, Jim came from a lot of the, he was the best of the Long Island hacks. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, he was so it's kind of like Tony Rock was like a Chitlin' Circuit comic. But he was heads above.
Yeah.
Like, he was so much better than those guys that it translated across. But I even remember when he started doing comedy.
As Jammin' Jim?
Jammin', when he was Jammin' Jim.
When he was Jammin' Jim.
Have you ever seen that headshot? Where he's got, like, the white snake hair?
Yes.
Oh, my God. It's phenomenal.
Are you kidding me?
It is Jim, phenomenal.
Jim was, here's when I really... of kind of fell in love with Jim. When Jim roast, he's so mean and so it's beautiful.
That's delicious.
Oh my God, it's people. Now here's a funny thing that I find this, and do you know Candy?
Candy Claire.
Candy Claire, she was working with New York Comedy Club, and then she just moved out to LA and stuff. I don't know.
I have not had a chance to work with her,
but
the name,
okay,
the reputation proceeds.
So here's the thing. So the thing is that Candy worked. She worked stand up a lot, right? And she was hanging out with us, right? So here's the big question: you hang out with these guys, maybe some of the most the funniest and the smartest and the most creative people you ever, like, just right. How do you get, because her biggest problem is, how does she has such a problem dating squares because she compares you know what I'm saying? When you talk about those magical moments, like, how do you bridge that?
Well, you know, I got married last October.
Okay.
And my husband, I've known him since high school.
Okay.
He lived in Washington for the last, you know, 20, 30 years. Mm. Worked at a paper mill in Washington. Was a union paper mill worker. 20 years. Punched
so
the clock.
A regular dude, but just a good dude. Just a
so fucking regular, it's obnoxious. You don't get more regular than he is. But his sense of humor, his own sense of humor, and he had never been to a live comedy show before.
Really?
I took him.
Wow. How long ago did you take him? His first one.
When we first started going out, you know, cause we kept in touch for years and years remotely. Just, we were friends in high, you know, we knew each other in high school, and we just kind of kept in touch through social media, whatever. And, circumstances just allowed us to connect in 2018 in person. Had zero expectation of anything romantic happening. He was just coming down for a vacation from Washington.
Right.
And
as you often do.
Yeah. Well, I took a bit, you know, I was living in Long Beach, and it was not uncommon for friends from out of the area. That's happened to me for the last 20 years in LA. Yeah. If I was living in LA, hey, I'm finally going to make it to LA. Can I come with you?
Can I come and show?
Can I come to a show? And I happened to be working with the Rec Room in Huntington Beach. Okay. Great club. Loved that club. So I was working with the Rec Room, and Dan Cummings was the comic that weekend that he came down. And so his very first live comedy experience was Dan Cummings.
Okay.
And just in conversation, we would always make, Marty and I would always just make each other laugh. We could laugh at anything.
Right.
Which is important anyway, but what he laughed at during the show.
You were like, okay, this guy.
I had heart, like, it was like little hearts and birds, you know? I was like, and I love that he's not in the industry.
Right.
He has respect for it. He doesn't understand it.
When you say he doesn't understand it, what do you mean?
Because there's times that he just doesn't understand. He's like, I get it, but it's just so far from normal.
I've been doing it 20, so it's hard for me to even perceive normality.
Well, he doesn't understand, like, during a show, if you have a set time, why would you ever be late to that if that's your job?
Okay,
that's a
union
guy.
You know what I mean? Like, there's
that's a union paper mill dude. That's
exactly. Yeah. So there's just little things where he's like, I don't get that, and I try and tell him that there's a mix of personal and business that's unlike what you deal with in real out there 9-to-5 punching a clock type of business, you know. And it's funny because he told me one time, he goes, wasn't that your comic, your friend? He goes, you're always really nice to him. I said, I'm nice to everybody. But no, I don't know. I know him as well as you do. He comes into the club. You know, I've never hung out with him outside of the club. Like, we don't know each other like that. And so it's like,
why would that guy talk trash about you if you guys are friends? I don't understand. No. Don't you like each other?
They don't get it. No, it's just funny. It is funny. You know, it's just,
but you know, I'm going to tell you something. He's also not wrong in the sense of one of the obstacles.
Abnormal. It's an abnormal life.
Of most comics, that the thing that blocks them from real success, a lot of times it's something as simple as showing up for your spots, not being late, you know, not being late. And I guess in a sense, we give it credence because you almost can't not, because it's so rampant and we, you know, but he's not wrong. He's they're being disrespectful. You know what I mean? One of the things about the COVID that taught me, like, you get to a certain level of proficiency. And I didn't realize this, that how I was like, I'm not doing that show. I want to do that. You know? And then when it's taken away from you and you don't have the ability to get on stage and do what we do. Since I've been back, dude, I'll do a laundromat. I don't give a fuck. Like, get me on stage. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. You know, even from my perspective, and I'm always, I'm very mindful of keeping that peg. And I am, and I have to admit, I don't know if maybe it's a downfall now, but I have to admit, there is that part of me that's very old school about, you better put your fucking time in and pay your dues.
Right.
I'm sorry, but I am.
You're right. You know? Because with the social media and the Instagram and all this, guys but when you get those guys, when you I don't have to tell you, you ran around with Ralphie. You cannot cut the mustard unless you put your time in. And there was a, you know, when I start, I mean, I started, I was 34 when I started doing comedy. So, but I was 34.
Yeah.
I had a job with a pension but I knew that you had to pay your dues, that you shut your mouth and you respect the people. There were younger dudes, guys who were age-wise younger than me, but older than me in comedy. And I knew what my place was, and I knew where I could, where, what I, you know, you get a sense. And there's such, that's so not the case anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. Because I kind of watched that happen, which I'm sure you did too. You watched that tide change.
Yeah.
You know, where now all of a sudden, before somebody used to buy a ticket to a club because it was a comedy club and it didn't matter who was on the bill. Mm-hmm. Now people follow a comic.
Yeah.
Whether they're paying a gas station, an arena, or a specific club.
Right.
Because they're kind of curating their own fan base.
Right.
And that was never a possibility before.
Yeah.
Before, you know, I mean, I remember the days when internet sales for tickets were hardly a thing.
Yeah.
In 2000, when I opened the San Jose Improv, I was like, are you kidding me? I have to be there at 5 a.m. What for? Because the phones are going to start ringing. They're doing morning drive time press.
Wow.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. And then you're, you know, that's a big shuffle from, you know, now some clubs don't even keep a box office. They just, they're like, don't know. Go buy them online.
Yeah. They want, you can't
even get them at the website.
Yeah. 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 It's funny. I tried to, I was trying to buy food and I couldn't find the restaurant on Grubhub. So I called them and they were like, it was almost like I could see them going, you want to order to pick up? Like, what?
Confused and annoyed.
Who are you?
Yeah. Are you 96? Do you not have a cell phone? Yeah.
So it's
so fucked up their whole day, the system too. In a way, and in a way you have, because it's just different now. They're like, what? We don't even know how to do that anymore.
Yeah, well,
we just wait for the
piece of paper to print out on the thing. They had no idea how to take the order. Like I had to literally go to the restaurant and order to take out. And even then they were like, why are you here? You know, it was just like, it's insane.
Well, you know, every club has that thing where you keep server checkbooks, like the little tablets,
desk
checks, and a pen and a calculator and one of the credit card, old school credit card swipers where they sign and you have to take all the information out.
Right.
Just in case power outage or everything goes down and you still need to take orders and get orders.
Right.
The cooks and the servers that don't know what standard abbreviations are for shit.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah. And that was, or kids that aren't being taught cursive anymore.
Yeah. That even to that extent, but here, I wanted to say this. So you meet this guy, he's laughing at the things that probably the cringeworthy stuff. Probably because he's a union guy sitting around a bunch of dudes who've been in a paper mill and they're all shitheads and just talking, you know. So there's that. But I do find that a lot of women initially have a really tough time getting a dude because of what you're accustomed to men being a, I mean, you grab that mic, you gotta, I mean, I don't have to tell you, it's, you know what direction this is going in. And if you don't, you ain't letting nobody else know that you have no idea, if that's on purpose. And so you find it's men so much, regular square dudes are so, I don't know, could I maybe take you out? Maybe if you're not doing, you know what I mean? Like that kind of alpha-ism that you get accustomed to, that it becomes, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. I can see it in your eyes.
I do. And, you know, I have to say, I'm really, really lucky with my husband. He is, he was union mill worker and he's definitely a man.
Right. He's a dude. Yeah.
He has he's got a very kind heart, very compassionate.
Yeah.
And he's just, it's funny because he's almost old school respectful.
Yeah.
So at first,
opens the doors, pulls out the chairs, all of the work. Yeah.
Oh, no, you're not paying for that. Like, just, you know, very much opposite of anything I would have normally been into.
Right.
You know, and that's and it was just bizarre. I think it was because we were really good friends and knew each other from, mm-hmm. you know, from high school, that it just made it easy to, I think his guard wasn't up. We were just hanging out at the show.
Do you think would have been different if there was intent, there was an intent on his part?
No, I don't think he has.
He doesn't have another. Gear. It's no gear, right?
He's got no game like that.
Right.
He does things in a very subtle way, where he'll be like, "Hey, I remember you said you liked this thing that time," and so a box with a card will show up.
Right.
Very quiet, very indescript about stuff. He doesn't go out of his way. He doesn't make a fuss about anything. He's very even keel. So I think that's part of the appeal to me, is that there's not that aggression, and I'm very outgoing and I'll make a trucker blush.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, so I'm not.
Yeah, that was also what I was thinking about, is that you've been, in order to survive in the circles you are, you have to be tough. You get a dude
100%.
You get what I call a dude glazing, you know, and what's interesting even about that is that scares other men. Well, like I always talk to Candy, like Candy, when I, like any relationship problems, we would talk, she would always talk to me. And I was like, you gotta understand, like we broke you, you know, we broke you. And now you're like these, you know, insecure and not the sensitive, because I'm a sensitive dude. I'll do that. Like, I remember dating a girl and she said, "Oh, I didn't know they had peanut butter Oreos," right? I go, "Oh, yeah, they got a lot of different." She goes, "You're kidding me." I go, "Yeah, they got strawberry and this and that and the other birthday cake," right? And she was like, "You're kidding me," right? And so, like, for maybe a month, I went around and I found every kind of Oreo that they made. So pumpkin,
every variety.
So to the point where she had to go, "Babe, stop. No more Oreos. Like I have stacks of Oreos." But anytime I would find another flavor or something, I would go, "But I'll do that just," but kind of like, "Oh, you like these here." Do you know what I mean? But not like, "Oh, you know," it wasn't a presentation. It was, "I like you. I want to see you happy. This makes you happy here." You know, where she would literally be like, she would go, "Oh, I like so-and-so." And she would go, "But don't buy it." Like, she would have to, because she knew.
Careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
You wish for. Because if you mention it out loud, it'll come true.
It's funny. I'm married now. It's a funny thing. My wife, I lost my headphones, right? And I got these Sennheiser, these really dope headphones, because I'm super indulgent. And I lost my headphones. And she sent me a picture of that she found them in, you know, a little case, a little wireless. And she said, I have your headphones, right? And I go, like, frantic. And she goes, and I go, "Thanks. Oh, great." Right? And she goes, "Because if I didn't tell you have them, you will go and buy another pair. Like, I will not do without." You know what I mean? And I said, "Oh," she goes, "Yeah, I know, you'll just go out and buy another one." And I go, and I didn't tell her this, but I had already bought another pair, right? So now I have two. But you know, that it's kind of that kind of, and so it's one of the things that we, you know, like, this is a relationship podcast. And one of the things is I say real game is no game, because there's an authenticity.
100%.
If you're trying to, you know, I mean, and you know, just like, you know, I talk about comedy and you know, like, we were talking, I was talking to somebody, or we were doing a show earlier, and I was saying how when you do crowd work, there are people who do contrived card work. It's planned. I know what I'm gonna say. And there are people who you talk to they're doing crowd work and they're listening and talking. It's happening in real time. So, and I say this to younger, because I do a class every once in a while, and I'll say, stop asking people who has cats. If you're gonna do your dumb cat joke, do your fucking dumb cat joke. You don't have to. You're not gonna connect with them because you have a cat in there. Oh, we're cat people. Now I'm gonna listen. They're gonna listen to you anyway. And the fact that you're being disingenuous, as if to connect with them in a way on cats, that okay, now we're both cat people, so I'm gonna laugh. It's just, it's so absurd. Whereas when you don't give a fuck about the, I shouldn't say you don't give a fuck about them, but when you're doing what you do, they understand that they will follow you because you're leading them. And so what you're talking about is that he has no game. It's like there's an authenticity of going, you like this.
That's the best game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is no game. I just, you like it.
It's,
I want
no
you to
game,
be happy.
It's the best game. Oh, yeah. 100%.
It comes in the form of sincerity. You know, it just comes in the form of like being honest.
Oh,
and
yeah,
if you care, caring and doing and having no shame about it. Like,
well,
that's,
you know, it's
amazing.
I was blown away because I've always had, you know, like I said, I used to do Sunday supper every Sunday.
Right.
I used to,
but you
and
do
I
that because you
as
care.
Often as I can.
Like, you care. You didn't do it as a phony thing, a networking tool.
Yeah.
You do it because you're like, I want to make sure everyone's taken care of. And that people feel that affection and that genuine nature. And they appreciate that.
I have to say
that
the one thing that I used to get in trouble for at the Hollywood Improv is that they'd be like, what fucking manager has a $200 comp bill for food? I'm going, the kids were hungry. Everybody got a hamburger, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but that was, it was true. They'd come in and I was,
and they'd
like,
be hungry. They really are hungry.
I was like, I think these motherfuckers all live in the same studio apartment.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they're hungry. And that was one of the things. I was like, they're looking at each other. You know those old school cartoons where they're stranded on an island?
Yeah.
And they see each other
and
like
look,
a hamburger
looking like
a
chicken.
I was like, yeah. I was like, they're looking at each other like that cartoon right now.
Yeah.
Maybe I should throw another basket of fries out there and some burgers. You know, feed them. But doing that, like cooking for them, going to the clubs and hanging out, and even after working at the clubs, I used to go into Hollywood and hit the clubs. And I do once or twice a week, and I just make pans and pans of baked goods.
Uh-huh.
And I throw them in like the green room or at the bar or at the server station.
Right, right.
And I throw them out and I make enough to hit, you know, I do the trifecta. I'd hit the factory and then the improv and then the comedy store. And I would go and I would take the baskets of stuff, you know?
Uh-huh. Right.
And any other time I was dating, I could tell that they'd be annoyed. Like, exes were always like annoyed at any of the attention that I'd give to the comics.
Yeah.
There was always like a certain level of annoyance. And I was like, well, then, you know, I'm going to pick them every time. So
then that comes from just a negative self-esteem and not believing that you deserve it. So you start to wonder, you don't want any competition because you're worried that you could lose. That's why you want to eliminate any possible competition.
He was talking about these boyfriends who are jealous of this attention. I call it shoplifting the pussy. It's like you're trying to sneak.
That's a good term.
You're sneaking. You know you don't deserve to be here, but you're here. Now you want to, everybody get back. Everybody, nobody else. When the reality is, somebody who, especially a woman with that kind of dude glazing, she'll give you it all if you're deserving of it. Like, but if you're not, because if you're saying I'm not worthy, and this is women in general, I say this all the time. You guys don't understand the empathy of what it is that a woman has an intuitive sense that I believe in my heart and soul that it's genetic. I've said this 100 times. When a woman goes out with a guy, she's going, I'd love to go to the Olive Garden with you. for free breadsticks and salad, and I hope you don't kill me. Like, that is a thought. She has to be concerned of whether or not you're going to rape her or murder her. And women over and over again, largely, will choose the breadsticks and the salad. Oh, you know what I'm saying? Hoping that the intuitiveness of a woman understanding the disingenuousness of men has to be so heightened, because right. It could mean your life. Now, you being around comics, even more so, is there's an intuitiveness that you get from being, and this is what I was saying about how, I mean, your dude got lucky, because I've seen so many women around who, you know, women who are in the business around people, we break them. You get, because you're like, you go out on a date and you're like, you know, and he wants to tell you a joke. I got a joke. And you're like, dude, I've been hanging. I was Ralphie Mae's road manager. There's nothing you're gonna say that's funny. And if you do, I'm surprised. But all right, go ahead. You know, guys in a bar.
Too. You know. Well, you know, that was the funny thing, is that his dry wit in just natural conversation or observation, or in general observation, flows so naturally that I think he doesn't even realize he's being, you know, that he is funny sometimes.
So authentic.
And sometimes I'll laugh and he'll just side eye me and go, oh yeah, I guess that might have been construed as funny. Yeah. But you know, but he's kind of serious too.
Right. Hilarious. Which makes it even funnier.
Makes it funnier.
Yeah, oh,
my
that he's
aunt,
not
my
even
aunt
aware of
and
it.
I, who are like the biggest connoisseurs of comedy.
Really?
The two of us. Oh yeah.
So you got an aunt that's all into.
Oh, she's we must talk. We talk over Snapchat. We send each other the most ridiculous shit all day. She'll have Pete Holmes became a part of our everyday language accidentally.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, in 2017, I took a year off from everything. Uh-huh. And I went back up to Northern California and I stayed with my aunt and helped her tend to my grandfather in his final days, and then get the house together afterwards, because my dad had already passed and there weren't anyone else around to help her with that. Uh-huh. It was just not, there just wasn't.
There's nobody else, yeah.
No, and so I went up and I took a year off, and it was just, I know that her sense of humor, she likes cleaner humor.
Okay.
She just likes cleaner humor.
Fine.
She can appreciate something, and she's older, you know, she's my dad's age.
Yeah, because it's also a cultural
thing. And an age thing too. Yeah. You know, she's an older Mexican lady.
Yeah,
like, you need that dirty crap, you know. But she appreciates a really well-crafted joke, and she didn't want to hear any music. We had just dropped my grandfather off at hospice and we're driving home. Mm-hmm. And the drive was just too quiet, and neither one of us felt like talking. Mm-hmm. And I said, I can't sit in this silence, it's just uncomfortable,
right?
And it was heavy silence too, because of the circumstance. And I was like, oh my god, I want to throw comedy on, but I don't want to.
It's
like, who should I put on?
Yeah,
because I was like, you know, nobody can slide a dick joke in there, or it's gonna blow this car ride,
right.
And so I put on Pete Holmes, Impregnated with Wonder.
Okay.
And we cried laughing the whole way home.
Right.
And he has this bit where he talks about, you know, because his humor is very layered, and to me, and I prefer blue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was on the road with Ralphie.
Well, right.
But Pete's one of my favorites because he's smart about his silliness.
Right.
If that makes sense.
And he's very comfortable with it.
And
very
he's
comfortable. He's goofy and comfortable. Just because
fun dad.
I was just saying this to Pete. When Pete came and started doing comedy, I was in the Boston. He was barking in front of the Boston, and so he's such a big goofball. People used to pick on him all the time, and I would always stop them from bullying him. I'm like, yo, leave him the fuck alone, you know, like that. But he's so comfortable with his goofiness. But I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's okay. So I believe it's one of the first bits on that particular album, but he talks about freaking himself out or scaring himself just within his own head.
Right.
And he's talking about driving for hours alone and then all of a sudden getting this feeling and reaching behind the seat as if to, you know, just feel like you feel like something's back there.
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes, what happens the day I feel a face?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, well, you know, then what? Why would I reach back? Like,
right. That, I'm not a guy that,
very much like his thing. But that struck such a chord with her that it was just, it was one of the, we were crying laughing by the end. I was laughing, not because I hadn't heard that album 90 times before.
But the way it affected her.
Right. Just really, that was just like
how it impacted her.
Beautiful moment.
Somebody you cared about, yeah.
Yeah.
So flash forward to, you know, a couple months later and I'm working a little, but still, you know, still there at the house with her. And of course, with anything I do, it's late at night.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not used to having somebody come in late at night. She's lived alone with my grandfather for 10 years.
Right. It's nighttime is for sleeping.
And she is like a lighter sleeper.
Mm-hmm.
Never been married, never had kids. So she's, you know, that's going to freak, you know, that would freak her out a little bit.
Right.
So I opened the front door real quiet as if I were sneaking in past curfew, you know, just not to wake her up. And, I hear her yell, I'm feeling a face across the house. And I went, it's just me. And so it became a thing where from that bit and from that day, anytime I walk in unannounced, she'll go, hi, face.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back here.
Comes with this kind of inside joke.
Thing.
Yeah.
And it's just always amazed me what a huge part of comedy, what a huge part of our lives, our everyday lives, good comedy can be.
Right.
Plus, it's a well-written joke,
you know,
just becomes a part of conversation. Marty catches a lot. My husband catches a lot of that.
Right.
Where he'll laugh and he'll
gets it.
That's like, he gets it to the point where he's like, hey, that's like that bit. And even when I think he's not listening or doesn't find something particularly funny,
mm-hmm.
he gets that right away.
Yeah.
It's
funny because Harry and I have this thing we do, you know, and we have this thing that we do with Pablo Francisco. We always go, hold my baby. Here we go.
Hold my baby.
The girl is going to fight this girl for that. She goes,
hold my baby.
Hold my baby. And we do this all the time and we fall out because it's like, hold my baby. So I get
those little things that bring you joy. There's those little things that
100%.
You do. Yeah.
I feel like there's an absence of really good writing like that anymore. That for as many comics that are out there with followings and with everything else, that they just don't do it like they used to. You know, there's very few
but let's be honest, there was always far and few between. I mean, you were very lucky to be around. I think you were around the ones that were great, and so your perception was like, oh, it was all these, but it was always.
But no, they were really few and far between.
It was few and far between. There was a whole lot of shit coming. I mean, when you talk about like Jim, his pool was shit.
Yeah,
a lot of the bridge and tunnel dudes were shit. Still are shit. You know, even if you talk about, you know, I mean, and this is older than 2000, but even if you talk about, you know, people talk about the bastard, you know, like Def Jam and how, but Def Jam was a plethora of so many different styles.
Yeah.
That when Stan Lathan kind of bastardized it with Comic View.
Yeah,
it became a thing where, like, I went out to Canada, and the dudes had got out in Canada. They had gotten the Def Jam tapes, and everybody was doing Def Jam stuff. I mean, they were doing
Canadian
the
Def
bits.
Jam.
It was
I was thinking.
Yo, it was
Women be shopping, eh? Women be shopping, eh? I called my wife up. I said, where you at? She said, I'm shopping, eh?
She was like,
man, I have a soft spot for Canadian comics. I love them.
Canadians are great. I love Canadians. I just love the idea of Canadian Def Jam.
Yeah, but
you see this Calgary Flames game, eh? What the fuck they doing? Y'all play too much.
Yeah, it was like, you ladies have to wash your private parts. Yeah. If you want us to eat it, you gotta wash it. Eh?
So, I ain't afraid of you motherfuckers.
So it's but if you really think about it, there was always special people. Yeah. I think that you've just I almost get a sense of just, you know, even talking to you, your love for it and how enlightened and how lucky you feel about being a part of it. Brought, you know, those, they, you became kind of the moth to the flame, you know what I mean? Because you were open to kind of seeing these people, these really creative and special people. And then, and they came to you because you just, you know, because you were the, I fuck with her, you know what I mean? And so they really, but it's just, it's an interesting thing. It's like, you know, we don't want to do the, you know, we don't want to do the, you know, back in the days, you know, my dad used to go, you know, yeah, with this hippity hop and this boogity boo.
Stop it. I mean, my dad was really open. Like even hearing 2001. I brought him into the improv in San Jose to see Gabriel Iglesias.
Okay.
Because my dad's very, you know, he's very
straight,
born and raised Mexican in San Jose.
Okay, you know? Okay. Oh, all right. So yeah.
And so Raiders fan and everything. So it's just funny to me because he came and out of all, he loved Gabriel, but he loved Felipe.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, he just sounds like, he said, he sounds like family.
Yeah.
Like, and it was just funny to me that he caught, because that was, they were all very young in it then.
Yeah.
You know, Gabe was headlining and definitely selling out, but it was, I still feel like that was early for him.
Yeah.
And definitely for Felipe. And I think Martine was hosting at the time. So like, it's just weird that he saw it and he was like, he's gonna be really, really big.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he got to see him win Last Comic Standing.
Right.
Like that was like, I think that was like right the year before he passed. So I was like, I was so glad he got to see that because he was like, he's making it. Like, he was happy for that. And I like that he kept an open mind and that everything didn't have to be Red Fox or Lenny Bruce
or George
Carlin. Like he was open-minded to listen to all of it and he loved it.
That's dope.
I still love watching open mics and seeing that one.
Even if I sat through
50 terrible ones where I'm like watching little pieces of my soul fly away. But you see that one and it brings it all back. And you're like that.
You know what I always said? You know who I always said that about? Schultz. Andrew Schultz. When I first saw him, I was like, in fact, I introduced him to my managers because he was a dude, like at the time they were, I don't know if you remember the Village Lantern. You remember the Village Lantern? It was like a little spot around on Bleecker. He worked at, like he did a show and he produced and barked. 3 years he barked that room and just worked in that room. And I remember seeing him early on and I think because the guys who were on the stand now, you know, Kimowitz and them signed him because they had signed me and I introduced him. But it was like he was one of the dudes that I was like, yeah, that dude, you know, but you also see guys who have that and then they get to like a ceiling and they never punch through that. You know what I mean? Like Where you
mostly when I see that, it's fear and ego.
It's what? Fear?
Fear and ego.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a deadly combination for somebody that really has true talent. I think it stumps them most of the time.
Wow, that's amazing. Can you hang out for a little bit? We're gonna do something for the behind the wall with the Patreon, please.
You got it.
Thank you.
I will,
sweetie.
Absolutely,
you're the best.
Hang out.
You're the absolutely best. Anything you want to plug? Anything? So you're producing shows now, right? You're producing independently.
I'm working and producing shows. My primary gig that I'm really super excited about. I'm working with Tixer, which is a ticketing platform, and launching their comedy division.
Okay, dope.
Which I started prior to the pandemic, but
what's the format of it? What is the format?
It is such a cool platform. It does everything. It captures data, mm-hmm. and the clubs and the producers own their own data.
Okay.
It's not there. I think it's changing the landscape of how shows and clubs can market,
mm-hmm.
evening out the playing field a little bit. And just the technology is pretty flawless. And I'm kind of into that. I'm kind of a geek with technology anyway, but I love the possibility of what it can do for artists, for clubs, for producers across the board.
So dope. That's dope. Social media, any where they can get you, whatever?
At D Burdette for literally everything. Facebook, okay. Instagram, Twitter.
Dope. Harry, talk to me.
You can see all my stand-up on my YouTube channel at Harry Terjanian, and all my social media at Harry Terjanian. And follow us over at the Patreon. We're talking about some cool stuff over there. Patreon.com/manschool202. It helps us keep this show going, and helps us keep giving you this advice about life and ladies and everything in between, man.
Andre D. Thompson, he's also one of the co-hosts. He's out in LA doing New Faces now, Funny Dude. So just want to plug him real quick. All of my stuff, just Google me, Dante Nero. I've been around. You can find me Instagram, The Dante Nero. Don't forget the Patreon. Also, the relationship stuff, one-on-one consultations, DanteNero.com. Click on consult, and you can book time with me if you got a problem or whatever. GYBB, get your balls back. WWDD, What Would Dante Do? The Sexual Revolution is being podcasted. I love y'all, man. We are out.